What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
You already see it, the red, white, and blue everywhere, the promises of patriotism. July 4th is right around the corner, and this country is celebrating, well, some folks in this country are celebrating 250 years since the signing of the Declaration of Independence. For many of us, this day rings hollow. For many more, the celebration of the day is a slap in the face, a joke, a lie, irrelevant to our daily lives in America. For black and indigenous folks, brown folks, poor folks, immigrants, and queer folks, this holiday has long been a farce. Quick story, and I hope she's listening. I'm cut from Vegas, and there are absolutely no politics in that desert, like none. How I ended up the way I ended up, I have no idea. I guess I gotta credit my radical mama. But when I was working at Community Coalition in South Central, I had this friend, Lucy Castro. I think she's Lucy Castro James now. And she was always super supportive of my art. And she was like, I got you a chance to spit at this thing called The Farce of You Lie. I was like, The Farce of You What? The Farce of You Lie. So I went and I spit, and I got to give Lucy Castro a big shout out for upping my political game 20-something years ago. I've never let that phrase go. We're going to talk about The Farce You Lie this morning. Our guests today are Kalonji Jamachenga, organizer, founder of the FTP Movement, co-chair of the Urban Survival and Preparedness Institute, and co-founder of Black Power Media, longtime advocate for black self-determination and community organizing, has led campaigns against so many things, police brutality, advanced political education, and help build grassroots programs that strengthen communities across the country. I don't know if that's the right bio, because we did just fix this, but he do a lot of stuff, and he's my comrade and my brother. What's happening, Kalonji?
Hey, you know what we do around here. What's happening, Kat?
Thank you for joining. I know we got you briefly, so let me introduce my next guest, and we'll get into it. Karina Gold is the chair and spokesperson for the Confederated Villages of Lishan, born and raised in Hushin. She's the co-director of the Sokorate Land Trust, which works to return indigenous land to indigenous people. As a longtime indigenous leader and organizer, Karina has dedicated her life to protecting Bay Area shell mounds, advancing the sovereignty of her people, and standing with indigenous communities to defend sacred lands and waters. Good morning, sister.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Both you comrades and warriors in my life and in these times. I was getting ready for the show this morning, I Googled, I know they're evil, but The Farce You Lie. And obviously Google did not define it like we do. But I thought actually what they said was interesting. It says the phrase Farce of You Lie likely points to the intricate comedic nature of how lies unravel in storytelling and human interaction. In comedy and theater, a farce uses highly improbable situations, extravagant exaggeration, and stereotyped characters caught in a web of contradictory lies. As the pressure builds, characters dig themselves deeper, resulting in rapid fire chaos. I was like, well, that sounds like America to me. And then it goes on to talk about the impact, and I want to get to you, so I'm going to stop reading. But basically, it talks about cognitive dissonance, right? That the impact, real-life impact, when your personal inner experiences sharply clash with your external reality. And that's how I think we walk around in this country, right? All colonized people in a continuous state of cognitive dissonance created by the lie of America and the fact that we're forced to participate in a system on the daily that we know is trying to kill us. So I'm gonna stop talking, and I'm gonna go to Kalonji first, because I know you got to dip, I think, in like 8 minutes, because he's got another interview. So very, very sought-after brother. Your thoughts for the Kalonji?
Yeah, no, I'm good for about 20 minutes, about 18 minutes rather. But, you know, yeah, man, I mean, the Farce of July, I mean, I think that's somewhat of an understatement. You know, as I reflect and look at this thing, I was like 6 years old when they had the whole, was at the bicentennial, right? And so here we are 50 years later, I was five going on six, 50 years later, and we're looking at this whole 250th year. And I was thinking, because I was on a panel recently and they were talking about, you know, how many years the United States was at war, so on and so forth. And they came with all kinds of fancy numbers, so on and so forth. And the reality is the entire 250 years, the United States has been at war or conflict with other people. You understand what I'm saying? From whether it's the native, the indigenous people of this land, or African people as a whole, throughout the diaspora, throughout the world, so on and so forth. way before the War of 1812, way before, you know, any of these other contradictions, you know what I mean? And even, you know, just thinking about the Declaration of Independence, you know what I mean, the contradictions with that, just knowing that the man who penned those words, Thomas Jefferson, had over 600 slaves, enslaved Africans. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like to see African and other indigenous people celebrating this particular farce is crazy. Nothing is even made in the United States. The very fireworks, the flags themselves, the American flags, all made in China. You know what I'm saying? And we're talking about this whole independence situation. And, you know, it's amazing that we're still buying into this.
Sister Karina.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kat, for having us on here today. You know, I think about the farce of July when we were doing the West Berkeley Shell Mound campaign, and we brought hundreds of people to this sacred site to talk about how we're standing on sacred land in a place that looks like a parking lot, right? Then we look at California. California hasn't even been here for 250 years, and still we call it California. Right. We don't talk about the genocides of the California Indian people that have continued to happen here through removal of our languages, removal of our people, the disenrollment of California Native people, and that that this country is still erasing us as Native people across this place. But then we talk about the farce, the imagination, right? There's this imagination that this country even exists on Turtle Island, an indigenous people that have been here for thousands and thousands of years with separate, territories and separate language and separate belief systems. And then most recently, when you introduced me, Kat, you said Huchun. That word is a word that has been here more than 250 years. It's a farce that we call the Bay Area, anything but the place that it was called in its original people's tongue. And so this is make-believe that, you know, when we're looking at a president that's sitting now that can make up laws as well as he will, pens things and destroys things, the environment and is trying to kill the planet as we sit here talking about the farce. We're talking about the farce of everything right now, right? It's a made-up system that people can willy-nilly just change at any moment. And so as indigenous people, it's important for us to hold on to our belief systems, our spiritual practices, our way of being in this world, to remember, but to hold on to what our ancestors have always taught us to be, is to be the caretakers of these places and to continue to do the work that we've been given to do on this earth.
We have also now been joined by my sister, Morningstar Ghali. She's the project director for Restoring Justice for Indigenous Peoples, California Tribal and Community Liaison for the International Indian Treaty Council and Tribal Water Policy Organizer for Save California Salmon. She's a longtime Indigenous organizer and advocate. I think Morningstar is one of the people I've known like almost the longest in this place. Black Red Solidarity, doing that work together. Morningstar works to advance indigenous sovereignty, protect sacred lands and waters, support native-led movements for climate justice, gender justice, and the right of indigenous communities throughout California. She's a member of the Ajumawi Band of the Pitt River Tribe in northeastern California. And both of you, I have a thing with pronunciation. It's horrific. We comrades, be like, nah, that was wrong. So just know that. Morningstar.
You got it right. Thanks, sis.
I'm 2 for 2 this morning.
You got it right. So appreciate that. Jimmy Sunwe, Tuzi Kamaticha. Greetings, relatives. It's good to be on with all of you.
Morningstar, I just asked Kalanji and Mama Karina to talk about the farce that is America, right? The joke of the lie that this is the land of the free and the home of the brave, that this is even a real country, actually, that's rooted in anything other than violence and blood and theft and rape and incarceration. And I could go on, but I'll let you talk about that contradiction.
Sure, it's absolutely a contradiction. So for this year in particular, as 250 years of the Declaration of Independence is being celebrated, It's, you know, an opportunity for us all to reflect on, you know, those promises that did not include us. And so that did not include us, especially as California Indian peoples and tribal nations across this continent. And so this upcoming so-called holiday carries that complicated history. Our ancestors were not seeking freedom from Britain. We were fighting to protect our homelands, our cultures, our way of life, as we very much are continuing to do so today. And so when we think about the Declaration of Independence, you know, itself containing one of the earliest examples of anti-Indigenous language in these founding documents. It refers to Native peoples as merciless Indian savages. The work that we do through Indigenous justice addresses language nuances, you know, in terms of the importance. I say every day as a California Indian woman is a fight against erasure, is a fight against invisibility. And so, you know, these are words that are still being celebrated today, and they are not accidental. You know, they helped to justify the disposition of Indigenous lands and the violence that followed it. And so here we are 250 years later, that we are still working to undo the harm caused by those narratives. We're still working to protect our sacred places, revitalize our languages, defend our religious freedom. I'm just on my way to the state capitol this morning. We have a bill that we're co-sponsoring, AB 1881, the California Indian Freedom Act, where in this day and age, in 2026, we as California Indian people are still fighting for our right to be able to pray in our sacred places, for our right to be able to gather on our lands without the interference of the state. And so here we are today, there will be a room packed of California Indian peoples that will be there, you know, to defend our right to pray, to defend our religious rights, and to protect our sacred places. And so that's what this time and in this moment represents for us here.
That's a great segue to the next question, which I'm going to start again with Kalonji. And for also, Kalonji, congratulations. Kalonji just hit a two-day summit. Organizing is the new cool. I don't even know how many panels you had and people, but it was a lot. And political education is critical to our movement in this time. So thank you for hosting that. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. And
thank you.
We gotta celebrate the wins. We gotta celebrate the work, because the rest of it is so heavy. Yeah. You are forever organizing. Right? One of the things I love about you is you are an actual organizer, and you push organizing as a discipline. In what ways, times like this, at the height of contradictions, do you use this moment to engage folks in political education and build movement?
I think that, and I appreciate you coming through, and there were over 50 organizers on that summit, just for the record, in those 2 days. But, and I thank you for what you brought to the table. I think that this time period is a reminder from not only the Indigenous people of this country, but the Indigenous people of the planet, to understand that the 4th of July, it's not just a quote unquote American thing. This is a marker, a historical marker in colonialism, in fascism, in genocide. You understand? This is a time that we commemorate the blood-soaked soil of the land everywhere from, when I say the land, I'm talking about, you know, all over the planet. We're talking about from the Congo to the Sudan, to Rwanda, to Ethiopia, to Haiti, you know what I'm saying, to Colombia. We can go on and on and on, you know what I'm saying? But this is a reminder to us, to all of us, that if we don't stand as one, you know what I'm saying, that this genocide will continue until we're all wiped out. We deal with a very ruthless nation that we reside under. And the fact that we still have Africans, like I said, the indigenous folks of this land, you know, the natives of this land, that are still, quote unquote, celebrating, making hot dogs and dancing and partying and acting like, you know, it's all good, chilling at the casino, all of that type stuff. You understand what I'm saying? The fact that this is still a thing shows us the level of insanity that exists amongst humanity. You know what I'm saying? As you all may know or may not know, I served as co-director of Leonard Peltier's ad hoc committee, right? And so we got time, we had the opportunity to spend time not only seeing him in prison, but when he was released, spending time on his land, and also seeing not just indigenous people of this land who were true and understood that this is war, but also seeing sellouts. And so I point this out because there are sellouts of all complexion, of all hue, of all nationalities, so on and so forth. And we don't want to trick people into believing that as African people, we all about revolution, or as indigenous people, we're all about revolution. We have a ways to go. And we have to be absolutely clear that we must educate our people, educate humanity, that the 4th of July, the 4th of July is a reminder of the fact that the whole planet has been invaded. I'm talking about everything from the ecosystem to the animals, the plants. Everything has been invaded. Everything has been enslaved. You have animals in jail, which they call a zoo. You have fish in jail. You know what I'm saying? They take our ancestors and they place them inside of quote-unquote museums for folks to marvel over and take pictures in front of. They've stolen our trinkets. They've scalped, they've skint, they've lynched, they've tarred and feathered. You understand what I'm saying? They dropped bombs, the whole thing. So when you hear those fireworks, it should be a reminder of the Japanese, you know what I'm saying? How in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, over a 250,000 people, plants, animals, et cetera, were exterminated. We should be reminded of the natives of this land who were exterminated, put on camps, in camps, so on and so forth, concentration camps, jailed, imprisoned, and to this very day, you know, going all the way to this whole ICE situation, et cetera. So for us, it is a prime time for political education because of the fact that we get to show people in real time that, as you started off with that song, that this is America.
Kalonji Jamachenga, thank you for joining us. I'm gonna allow you a little breath before your next interview. I appreciate you. I'll be in touch soon. I thought I was coming to Atlanta this weekend, but no go. But the comrades are gonna be up there. So
hey, we you're here when I'm here, and I'm there where you are because you're there. Revolutionary love. I'll see you all later. Be love, safe.
Yes, you too. Kalonji Jamachenga is an organizer, founder of FTP Movement, co-chair of the Urban Survival and Preparedness Institute, and co-founder of Black Power Media, which hosted a two-day organizing summit over the weekend. Organizing is the new cool. I'm going to throw the same question to you, Karina. In this moment, what is the opportunity to organize, educate, and bring folks into the work that is happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really love what our brother said before about bringing all of this together. But I want to say that, like, in the most recent week, the last week that I participated with Kumupua case and delivering over 500,000 petitions to the Betty Gordon Moore Foundation to cease and desist the building of the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea, and bringing people from all over the world in that petition, having that conversation with them about why that is impossible to do and how that is disrespectful not only to the Kanaka people, but to all people. And so Chief Kellyn Siskin, I joined her in delivering that message along with Dr. Fuifui Lupe Numitolo. I also want to say that we just had a ceremony at the beginning of the Run for Salmon yesterday at Segurite and Vallejo, beginning to bring that, continuing to bring that prayer from our territory to Mount Shasta, and people from all walks of life participating in that prayer. And then you have to think about this. It's like, this is a prayer that crosses all kinds of lines, right? Ethnic lines, and all kinds of people from all walks of life that come together to join in this prayer. And why are we having to pray for salmon to come home? what is our responsibility as human beings, or what has happened to our salmon population that is important not just to California Native people, but to all people? And how does this affect our waterways? How does it affect the way that we live and breathe in California? And why is it all of our responsibility? And this prayer has brought folks together for 11 years to do this work. To pray, to educate themselves, to understand that it is all of our responsibility to be in alignment again with all that is living, and that we get stuck inside of these cement cities, and that looks like the Bay Area, and they forget about the waters that feed us and the lands that feed us. And so it's important. That's a way of bringing people in to educate ourselves about where we are and who are the first people of this nation and what is our continued responsibilities to our land and waters. But I also am a part of a faith leaders movement that is witnessing and watching the imprisonment of our relatives from across all these false borders because of ICE, and watching this and marching with people and singing with people and praying with people and bringing people in from all spiritual backgrounds to understand what our responsibility is to stand up against this farce of a government that is creating these prisons wherever they want to, that are imprisoning black and brown people from different nations, and are creating laws that are unlawful. That are not based in any kind of belief systems except racism and fascism that is taken over this government, this country. And so those are three ways that we are working together to do that, bringing people back to the land to remember their own callings of what it means to take care of this for the next seven generations. And I really love what our brother said about listening to these fireworks. I live in East Oakland, and
Yeah,
so the
there you
fireworks are going all the time, every day, but not
go.
with this
Thanks.
connection, right? The connection that these fireworks should be a memory of our people being bombed, our people being shot at, our people being by this government that created this false place, this false government that we now call the U.S. United States.
Real quick, I go back and forth to Hawaii. We actually saw each other, I think, at the airport not too long ago. And my kumu is Kumu Luis Mita. But my brother Kupono took me to a meeting. I'm coming right to Morningstar. Took me to a meeting, right, because there's this struggle to get the U.S. Military to give the land back and clean up the land back to the indigenous folks. And there was an older couple, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. Even though Kupono brought me in, when they heard I was from the Bay, they said, "Who are your people? Who do you know in the Bay Area?" And you gave me street creds. I appreciate our relationship. I was so grateful for that, because we just be letting anybody and everybody into our spaces without asking the appropriate questions. Morningstar, it's very rare that we go to any event or any Zoom call, at least in this part of the country, without the land acknowledgement, right? And it's like white, brown, black, we hear it. In black liberatory struggle, we talk about being more than a hashtag, right? Like, you got to do more than take a knee, because then folks feel like, oh, okay, well, I acknowledge the indigenous people of this place, but then I'm gonna keep carrying right on the way I've been carrying on without it actually impacting the way that I live. Has that been your experience as an indigenous organizer, and how do we stop it from just being a a thing we do as opposed to a way of life?
I also want to acknowledge, I appreciate Brother Kalanji's words that, I'm a community organizer at heart. That's what I've been doing my entire life. And so whether it's through, these different organizations and being able to mobilize and support in the ways that we are, such as this morning, it is an acknowledgement. Well, first I'll say that we fought for a lot of years for visibility, right? This was a fight to even acknowledge the names of our traditional lands and our traditional places. A part of the erasure That was very ingrained. That was part of the work that we did in removing the S word, removing the word squaw from over 95 public place names in California, and replacing it back with the traditional names, because that's important for the land to know and for the people to know that we are still utilizing these sacred names. And so, for example, for Mount Shasta, that's Yadaku for us as Pitt River peoples. And so, you know, I think that land acknowledgements are a first step, but it's also, we talk about minimal standards within international indigenous human rights spaces and frameworks. And so land acknowledgements are a minimal standard when it comes to that, that, you know, provide a land acknowledgement with the title, provide a land acknowledgement with reparations, provide a land acknowledgement, you know, in a way that the land is acknowledging us as well. And so it can't just be, you know, a generic or a blanket statement. You know, we appreciate the effort, you know, that as far as that goes, but the deep relationship, and that's what I appreciate about UCAT, about APTP, is that it goes beyond the land acknowledgement, and it goes to building meaningful relationships, to what it means to be, for myself, a Native organizer, within Black-led spaces, and what that looks like for us to be in deep relationship and solidarity with one another, and let's have those conversations with our communities. And you know, that is how we are going to get to the liberation that we are all seeking.
I could talk to you all forever, but a shared comrade, Annie, is in the waiting room. But before I bring her in, Karina, talk about the Shumi land tax and how people can pay it. And where they go to pay it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kat. Yeah, we have worked with allies and accomplices to create Shumi, and Shumi in our language means a gift. And we offer this as a way of building relationships for people that want to work on returning indigenous lands to indigenous hands. And Shumi can be found at SegoriteLandTrust.org on our website. Learn how to do go beyond land acknowledgement, as Morningstar was talking about. Learn how to be an accomplice to the work that we're doing to try to save the planet and to try to protect our sacred sites. And thank you so much for inviting us to be here today, Kat.
Thank you so much for saying yes. Mad love to you both. Lots of breath and water, and I hope I get to hug you soon.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.